Hi, welcome back to Amory Podcast, where it's our intention to bring more love into the world, one vulnerable conversation at a time, or monologue in this case. So thank you for joining me. Today's episode is actually recorded from a webinar that I did when I was introducing the course Transforming Jealousy. So in this episode, you're going to hear a summary of a lot of the different parts that we've created for the course. And I am sitting here feeling very, very, very passionate about sharing this content with the world. That's why we've recently taken the full online course and created it as a pay what you want course. Really, you have access to this at anywhere upwards of $5. And it is the full online course with dozens of audio files that are unique just to the course, with our writings, with journals, and honestly, with everything that we can pour from our hearts to support you in your feelings of working through jealousy. Because we all know that if you are starting an open relationship or continuing and just in this world of open relating, we can all have feelings of jealousy. And I think one of the worst thoughts we can have is like, oh, I've conquered it. I no longer am jealous. It's just not going to happen anymore. I know for me, I cycle back through these learnings actually that we put into the course. I have to use it. And I believe I will continue using it for the rest of my life. And one of the best things about what we've created and what we share here is that it's not just for transforming jealousy. It is for transforming our relationship to any emotion. And if you've been following our journey for a while through Amory, you may have noticed that I went through quite a crisis, maybe about a year and a half ago, of sadness. And I really had to fall in love with my sadness. I shared a video actually of the moment where I really felt like I accepted my sadness and understood it to be a beautiful feeling instead of something that I needed to reject or be afraid of. And in essence, that's what we hope that you gain from joining us in the course of Transforming Jealousy, that it's not an emotion to be afraid of. It's actually quite a few emotions mixed in there. It is fears, fear of the unknown, fear of yourself. It can be insecurities that we've carried around for years, and they just happen to pop up in the space of needing to create security, inner security for ourselves, and not to lean on any given relationship in our life, i.e. our attachment to others. And it is so much more. It's so much more than just one feeling that we name.
Okay. Wow. Okay. It's going to be really emotional.
There is no loss for being honest.
The real work of life is the work that we do inside ourselves. The
responsibility we feel towards the world, like questioning, challenging, say something.
Raw and vulnerable and open conversation.
That was the best part. I'm scared of friendship.
Taking a breath.
Just talk.
Shame and guilt. Vulnerabilities.
That was about to be something.
What does it really mean to be friends?
We trust you.
The real work that we do is overcoming our insecurities every day and learning how to love more.
As examples of the change we want to see in the world.
Just talk.
Taking a breath. So if we just take a breath.
My face is on fire from the tacos.
To have healthier relationships with women, they need healthier relationships with other men.
The real work of life is the work that we do inside ourselves.
So I'm in an open relationship with my husband, and my husband and I sold our house 10 months ago. We have twins that are 4 years old, we travel around the world, and this is my boyfriend.
Hi!
Perfect!
Here we are, talking about transforming jealousy, and it has been a journey for me over the last 3+ years. Actually, I'll admit that my journey with jealousy started when my kids were born, because I didn't realize that that was going to come up. We had an au pair with us, living with us for 2 years, and I went back to work full time. I was so jealous of her spending time with my little babies that I couldn't, and I didn't know what was happening. I didn't even know the feelings in my body. I couldn't understand it in my head. And there was absolutely no clue on taking any action on it, meaning processing that or setting boundaries. Like
I just sat with that for 2 years. And ultimately, I ended up working through it. But especially now, I'm practicing polyamory. I have just a completely different toolkit to help myself process jealousy in such an empowering way that I am bubbling at the seams just to be able to share it. So I'll give you, I guess, the, what do they call it? The 50,000 foot view of jealousy in our culture is that generally worldwide, it's kind of accepted as a proof of love, right? And we see in all of the media that if you're jealous, like, oh, that means I love that person so much. There's a lot of ways that we just accept jealousy as one of those feelings that is like a either a deal breaker or a wall or something that stops us from moving forward. And we just assume it just is like, oh, I'm jealous. And I find it so surprising that when I share with people that I've got an open relationship, usually the first thing that comes back is, oh, I could never do that. I'm too jealous. Or my partner's too jealous. I have never heard anyone say, I don't want more love in my life. Thank you. Like I don't, that doesn't come up a lot. And I have a lot of philosophies around relationships in general, which are probably helpful to share at this point. If you've listened to the podcast, I say frequently that relationships are learning vehicles. And that's because I think that we, in our conscious human experience, wherever you're at in spirituality or whatnot, but I believe that we can be mirrors for each other. And what we see bouncing back can actually just be information that we can interpret that we can then better understand ourselves and become more aware. And we'll talk about this is the outer world, and we're very well trained in the outer world, right? We're like, you got to do this, you go to school, you listen to people, do this in life, and it's all about the outer world. But very rarely do we talk about our inner world. And when we do, it's generally with this sense of spirituality or, you know, and then it's very divisive, you know, because it's like, well, then your inner world has a certain path and there's a right path. And I don't subscribe to that at all. I think that all of us have built out our inner universe, however that has happened. But we walk around thinking that we're in the same world. And that's the funny part, is that we each of us through our own experiences have built a mental model of the world that we live in. And then not to mention, each of us has different physical experiences in our body that we'll talk about, different emotional experiences that we're given very few tools on how to interpret and translate and especially take action on. And so that's the point where I want to focus and where I hear all of you in your short introductions of yourself is that you're really looking to empower yourself with some tools. And what I love about that is already it's framing the idea of jealousy in that it's something that yes, it happens, it occurs, it's got some physical manifestations, it's got some mental and emotional impacts. And at the same time, it doesn't have to be that wall, that deal breaker that stops you from having the relationships you want or being the person that you want to be. So that's a very empowered orientation towards jealousy that I just want to like tune up, you know, and it'd be like, here's some more skills that you've got. That's kind of my general orientation. And I'll dive into a couple different spots. And like you're mentioning before, each one of these, I could do a deep dive into like an hour or probably a full weekend workshop. So I really just want to give you some basic tools and we'll call it mental framework so that you can have something else, like a context through which your experiences show up. And that's my intention, is just to plant a whole bunch of seeds so that when you have certain experiences that you're like, oh, ding, 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 this is happening right now. Oh, what does that mean? Hold on, I can empower myself through this. So we'll start with your physical body, right? Your physical body has certain needs. Your physical body is very unique to you. How you treat, what you do with your physical body, what works with your physical body is super, super individual. But we live in a culture that tells everybody that what they should do with their body. It's not, doesn't give you a lot of sovereignty in your physical body. But the more aware you become of your physical body, the more you empower yourself with your physical body, the more then you can understand where your triggers are, like feel when you're triggered, right? And if everybody knows what that word is, and you know that feeling in your body when you get triggered. So my learning path on understanding what a triggered state feels like to me. And by triggered, I mean, we've got two modes in our body.
Hi, this is me interrupting myself. I actually got this next part incorrect. It is our sympathetic nervous system that is actually directing the body's rapid involuntary response to something that we consider dangerous or stressful. So that's our sympathetic nervous system. And it is our parasympathetic nervous system that actually calms our body down and gets us into that rest and digest state. So I'm learning all of this along with you. Thanks for this interruption. And thanks for understanding that I also make mistakes.
the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. And I believe it's the parasympathetic, that's our fight or flight mode. We get into this reactive mode. It changes our physiology. We kind of cut off temporarily a lot of our processing power of the prefrontal cortex. Our body is in a certain state. We are not in our best selves in that point. And we'll call that the fear state, right? So it has a physical manifestation that we can feel. And if we can become super attuned to that physical state, we then can empower ourselves to switch back over to the sympathetic nervous system. And that means that we are calm, we feel safe, we make different decisions there. So if you ever get into fights with people or your partner specifically, and you find that it's like trigger, 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 because that both of you are in a certain bodily state and you just literally will keep like spiraling off of each other. And because when you're in that bodily state, your mind is going to go off the rails a little bit. It's going to create stories that go along with the physical feelings that you're feeling, and vice versa. When your mind creates certain stories, you have a physical response. So to me, the way that I look at our physical and emotional body or mental, you know, all of those pieces, they're all connected. The mind-body experience, obviously, and they're proving that more and more. There are people like Wim Hof. Who's heard of Wim Hof before? He's a guy that focuses on breathing. Ooh, he's great. I'll send a resource after this to share. So he's about exposure therapy. So what he invites people to do is to jump into freezing water or to submerge themselves into freezing water and focus on their breath. And that, because that puts their body into the shock mode, right? The fight or flight, the, oh my God, get me out. This is freezing. So I liken our work with jealousy as an exposure therapy. You are exposing yourself to this extremely cold water, but the emotional version of that, which is like, oh my God, my partner's with someone or said that they love someone and I'm going to die. Oh, I can feel it in my body, because we're not safe. We're not safe in that moment. We have a story coming in, it generates a physical response. And then if we act from that place, we are going to be sending ourselves down a certain trajectory. And it doesn't feel good to be unsafe there. It is human, though. It is human. So there are people that focus on the body, like Wim Hof. He focuses on exposing people to cold water, breath. How do we use our breath to get ourselves centered? And all of these things are extremely useful tools. Maybe many of you have practices that you do already when you know that you're triggered or you're angry and you know you need to like get the feelings out. For me, I go for runs, or I stretch, or I dance, or I move my body in a certain way. So that's the body side. Then we have on the mind side, people like Dr. Joe Dispenza. So Dr. Joe Dispenza was a doctor that, because of his own life experiences, he ended up looking at, he's like, hey, doctors, we're doing all these tests with drugs to see if they're effective on the human body. And every test accounts for the placebo effect. Every test has to say, does the drug work better than the placebo effect? He's like, we're missing the point. What the fuck is the placebo effect? Why does that work? Why does that work? Why do we think that, like, what is happening in our mind when we think that we're taking something that's good for us and that it actually generates physical results? Like, what in the world is happening there? So he has beautiful content. I'll let you go down the Dr. Joe Dispenza rabbit hole if you want to, but he's very focused on mind, and people like Wim Hof are very focused on body. And I like to use both. I like to use my body to change my thoughts and my thoughts to change my body. And I'm going to add into that the emotional body, which I'm just getting in tuned with. Actually, I'll go back to the triggered response. I couldn't consciously be aware that I was in a triggered state until probably just 3 or 4 years ago. I didn't know the vocabulary, and I especially didn't know how to recognize it in myself. But through trial and error and lots of conversations with Marty, this was before we opened our relationship, every time he would get mad and go, Megan, you're deer in headlights, you're shutting down again. Like, he would say that as in, like, that's kind of derogatory towards me, to be like, Megan, you're checking out. But when I finally realized that that was my triggered response, I go stoic. I just like freeze. And so I started to get excited when he said that to me. I'd be like, oh, ding, 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 ding. I'm triggered. We need to stop this conversation right now because I am not present and it is not going to go a good way. So that was one of my first pieces of self-awareness, to start to understand when I'm in that state, like to even just recognize it and to empower myself to say, my body feels like this. I don't want to stay like this because I'm going to keep generating this feeling until I learn to calm my shit down. That is my sovereign right for my this body, is that I need to calm this body down before I move forward with this conversation. So that's on the physical side. Just now, like literally these past couple months, and especially working with women and now doing this self-love journey where I realize I'm in a primary relationship with myself, I've been investigating my emotions a lot more. And that's something that, again, I was raised by a stoic father. And so I thought that being stoic was the ultimate. I thought that emotions were a lesser than. I thought that I could control my emotions and that I didn't even need to listen to them. I disregarded them, and I totally disregarded anyone that was acting from an emotional state. Like, I would look down on them. So I had absolutely no translation tool between understanding what was happening in my physical body to understand that that was connected to an emotion, to then even now what I realize is that thanks to the book, The Secret Language of Feelings, if you haven't read that, that's another really good resource. The Secret Language of Feelings. Basically, the author's premise is that each feeling, and he only describes 8 quote unquote negative feelings in the book, that each feeling is associated with a lack of a need. Like, you have a need that isn't fulfilled. So for example, an easy one is boredom. The feeling of boredom is that you lack challenge. You lack like a healthy challenge. But in the face of that healthy challenge, you wouldn't feel boredom. So the premise is that we are naturally happy. We're naturally peaceful and loving and engaged. That is our natural human state, except for when we are either blocked in resistance or have something like a need not met. So the way I've been framing a lot of my emotions now is, what need do I have that is not currently met? And that's where I think that our current Western diagnosis of emotions is really fucked up, because we tell a sad person or a depressed person to take a drug to make themselves happy. That to me seems like ridiculous. I understand that there's some chemical, you know, something happens in the brain, but we are creatures of our environment. And if we are in the environment in which we have our needs met, we will be happy, we will be engaged, we will be curious, we will be loving, like all of that is naturally there. So the question is, what need isn't met if you're really sad? And that's generally feeling like you have people of value close to you, or people or things of value. For example, anger. Anger is a feeling of feeling like something isn't fair. And if something isn't fair, then that's where anger rises. But I like to go a step further to say, okay, if something isn't fair, what is my vision of fairness? And that's different for everyone, right? What I consider fair might be different from what you consider fair. So the question is, what need do I have that is not fulfilled that I need to request of? Or there could be some internal processing, but usually with an emotion, it can be really nice to feel empowered to go, I can meet that need. For example, I felt really, really sad when we were in New Zealand over the last couple months before we moved to Costa Rica. Marty was working a lot and I missed him. He just wasn't present for me. I wasn't being seen. I used to get jealous when he would work so much. And I was having those feelings again of being like, my partner isn't seeing me and I'm really sad. Like, see me, see me, see me, give me attention. But then I realized, oh, wait, I can be my own witness. I can witness myself. I can give myself attention. I can meet some of those needs for myself. And that was a really empowering experience for me, because as much as I want my partner or partners to meet the needs for me, in certain ways, that has been a crutch for me, because then I've been looking to other people to meet certain needs instead of realizing that there are quite a few needs that I can meet for myself. And I'm not saying that this goes for all things and all times and we should be completely independent and never need anyone, because we're human beings and we're not wired that way. But what we can do is ask ourselves the question, which I started asking myself in New Zealand, how can I meet this need right now for myself, even if it's in a small way? And so that's where I started having certain practices. Like, I needed nature, I needed to ground my body. And so I would take the kids out to a park and just lay on the grass. And that was me meeting a need for myself. When I so desperately wanted Marty to talk with me, to be like, hey, Megan, how was your day? And what's going on? And like, help me process my emotions. Because that's something that's a need that he generally fills for me. When he couldn't do that, I would start recording myself, just like I do for the podcast, but I would make recordings for myself. It wasn't the first time. That's a practice I've been using for a long time. But I would wake up in the morning and I would just record something, 10 or 15 minutes, and I would get it all out. And sometimes I would listen back to it and I'd be like, Megan, I see you. I feel you. You're seen. And I would just give that to myself. So as funny as that sounds, or as small as that sounds, it has made a really big difference for me, because then the first question that I can ask for myself is this something I can meet for myself? And sometimes it's not, you know, sometimes I have to make requests to be like, Hey, can I have a little bit of your attention? I'm feeling like this is what I feel in my body. And this is what I would like from you. And you mean a lot to me. And could you offer me some of your time? Could we go for a walk? I miss you, you know, but at least the difference in that was me empowering to see this is a need I have, and I can make a request to see if it can be met. And where jealousy is a trickster is that jealousy will keep us constantly focused on the outside world. It will constantly be telling us that the way that you feel or the way that I feel is someone else's fault. It's my partner's fault that he's not giving me enough attention. It's my metamour's fault because, and this is a true story, because she talks to him from midnight to 2 or 3 a.m. and then he's tired and has to sleep in the morning. And so I'm with the kids. So it's my metamour's fault that I'm not getting the attention that I want. And so all of these things, if I stayed in that story, would keep me disempowered from meeting the need that I had. And I ended up getting needs fulfilled by me making new friends. And all that did with every step that I took to empower myself, I literally felt like I was pulling power back to be like, oh, I've given that power away to someone else. I've been blaming my outside circumstance, but that doesn't change my world. So how do I change my world? Oh, I need to take action. How can I take action? And sometimes that action is really just processing an old emotion and an old wound. So that's where I have a lot of compassion for people on this jealousy journey, because it is going to bring up everything. One of my friends says, there is no hiding in polyamory. There is hiding in monogamy. And I mean, no offense to people practicing monogamy, but when you don't have to deal with any fears or insecurities around losing your partner, or the fear of loss, or feeling insecure by not being good enough, because the structure of the relationship is set up so that you would never come into contact with that part of yourself, which is almost a little lie too, because people that are in monogamous relationships are still at the same fears of loss. You know, they're just not at the conscious level, because we tell ourselves if we're in a monogamous relationship that we're safe. Like, we use the structure of our relationship to tell us that we're safe. That's once again, using our outside world, our circumstance, to create inner safety. But what I love about polyamory, this relationship structure, is that it makes us deal with all our shit to be like, oh yeah, you thought you were done with that piece. There's that insecure piece right there. You got to deal with it. And what we can do, we can choose to, there is a choice, and this is the choice in the spectrum. I wish I had a rubber band. Usually I wear hair ties and I can do like the rubber band of jealousy, the degrees of jealousy. If we call monogamous relationships, imagine I had a rubber band or a hair tie around my hands here. We're going to call this a monogamous relationship. You don't get to see or feel or experience your insecurities there as much. They might come up. When you start to open a relationship and you see your partner maybe falling in love with someone else, that rubber band gets stretched. And in that hole, in that chasm, the subconscious stuff pops up, right? It's like, oh, insecurity, oh, fear. Oh man, I'm feeling that. And the more we stretch it, the more that rubber band stretches, the more that comes out. And I do caution people, because this is a different way of life. And most of us are not raised with the tools to process a lot of what's happening. And so I think one of the earlier questions was, how do I know how far I can go? That is so individual, but it's like that rubber band snapping. And if that rubber band snaps, you actually can cause more trauma in your relationship, because then that's something you have to repair. So that is unique to every relationship, unique to every person. And honestly, what I noticed is that it's really actually unique to how much energy I personally have and what I'm currently going through. So when we were living in New Zealand, it was not my ideal self. Like, New Zealand and the last 4 months in New Zealand, I'll say, and Costa Rica are like complete opposites. So in New Zealand, I was living in a communal center because we were living on a Maori farm, which was amazing. It was, I got to learn the Maori culture. I got to learn a little Te Reo. I was brought into a culture that is generally so shut off to people like me, you know, coming in foreigners, especially not of Maori heritage. So in one hand, I was so honored. And on the other hand, we were living in a little like hut, basically, that was half the size of my bedroom right now, on three mattresses on the ground for 4 months. And they had events going on constantly. So I would wake up and there would be like 30 people in the common space. And there was very little private space. And now I realize, and I know I need my energy. Like I'm really tuned in to a lot of people's energy. And so I need to be able to go into my like little private cocoon when I need to recharge. And I didn't have that there. There was like not a lot of private space. And not to mention, Marty and I were not having sex regularly because we were in the same room as our kids. And that's another need or another area that refills me. So there's like a lot of things that were not working for me. So there I was trying to just manage my shit because I basically was triggered probably 80% of the time. And so I was using all of my personal energy to manage my own triggers. And it wasn't even around relationships. It was just around life and managing the kids and going to, you know, get our laundry cleaned and like all of the shit that happens. I had no emotional space to help process anything else. So I noticed that during that time, I had no space for Kyle. Like Kyle was far away. He was in Tanzania. He was processing his own stuff. He was going through some things. And I was like, I am sorry. I can't hold that emotional space for you because I don't have room to hold an emotional space for myself. And that's where I realized that if my needs, my personal needs are not met, I have absolutely no emotional room to be present for anyone else. So if Kyle, that was at the point where I had to tell Kyle, I'm like, you can go and be with other people, but please just don't tell me because I can't process that right now. Because I'm just barely treading water to process my own shit in my own life. So that's where when that was happening, I was trying to meet my own needs in many ways. And in many ways, it was the best fucking thing that could have happened to me. Because in that exposure therapy way, I was like, ooh, this need isn't getting met. This need isn't getting met. This need isn't getting met. I want all of these needs met. How do I do that? So when we were constructing our life here in Costa Rica, I was like, oh, what do I need? What do I need to feel fulfilled? What do I need to feel emotionally centered, to feel safe and grounded? And what are my needs? So the more I knew my needs, the more I could construct life here in Costa Rica for the logistical pieces that I needed to keep myself as centered and balanced as possible. And one of those, like so much of this is not jealousy related. You know, a lot of this is life, like life structure related. I needed childcare. I needed somebody to watch my kids for 20 hours a week so that I could focus on some work because this fulfills me right now. This totally fulfills me. I love this. I love being able to have these conversations. I love being of service, of support to people. And that's something I wasn't getting there much because I was spending 80, 90% of my energy on just keeping regular life going. And I think we can probably understand that now and the ways COVID hit us and we realize in the lack of our needs being met, they become real clear. It's like, oh, this isn't met. Oh man, now I know the important things. So in some ways, the lack of something is a beautiful gift as well. But now that I'm here and I have childcare and I'm living in this beautiful place and Kyle is close and I get to go hang out with him every couple of days, it doesn't necessarily matter what Marty and his partner are doing. So I'm living with Marty and his partner now for 3 months here and they're on vacation for 10 days. I'm like halfway through that 10 days. And I feel great. I'm like, sweet. Doesn't matter what you guys do because I feel good for me. I've got my needs met. The basic needs of food and shelter. I can go out to the beach. Like my life is really good and I feel fulfilled. So the more I have fulfilled my own self, the more I have met my own needs and made sure I was responsible for meeting my needs, the more my partnerships and relationships get to be fun. You know, it's not this grabby, controlly thing. Like I need you for this. I need you for the validation that I'm a good person, that I'm enough and that I'm beautiful and smart. Like I need to hear that. it's like, no, I've like, yeah, cool. I've like met a lot of those needs. So let's go play. And that's where I feel like I'm at in my relationships, especially with Kyle. So Kyle and I had to restructure some things as well. And that's where I will highly, highly, highly recommend the book Polysecure. If you haven't read Polysecure, that is really helpful to understand attachment theory. Now, it's not everything. I view everything as like a tool or a lens that we can test out and see our life through. So if you put on the attachment theory glasses, attachment theory will tell you that we develop a certain way, either securely or insecurely attached. And there's a couple different ways of insecurely attached based on the ways that we interacted with our primary caregivers when we were young. So the book can go through and it's really helpful for you to identify. For me, I think I was fearful avoidant. So if things got hard or, you know, I would just like back away a little bit. Marty's the opposite. Marty's like, he does the clingy thing. And so that's where it didn't work for us, because the more he would try to cling to me to meet the needs, I'd be like, fuck no, that's too much. I can't do that. And so it was really helpful to create a framework around that. But at the end of the book, here's what I realized. I'm like, I'm not securely attached to myself. Ding, 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 ding. If I can be securely attached to myself, I can securely attach to anyone around me. And I will say, this goes beyond people. I think we're in relationship with everything. We are in relationship with money. We are in relationship with our surroundings. We're in relationship to ideas. We're in relationship to our future and our past. Everything is a relationship. So if we can be securely attached and securely relating to ourselves, it impacts everything, everything, everyone, every relationship in our lives. So I can't say enough about that book, except to say, yeah, just read it. I mean, read it, allow yourself to go down that rabbit hole. Remember, it's not everything, right? The last thing I would want is some kind of diagnosis for yourself to be like, oh, I'm insecurely attached, so now I will never be securely attached. Like that's not the case, number one. And it's only one lens. You know, there are so many different lenses that we can choose to see ourselves through. So I would say for you, test out what works, you know, try this one out, try that one out, see what it feels like, talk to people. But that for me, it was a really big one. The more securely attached I feel with myself, the better. That being said, it is not linear. It's not like, I'm securely attached, I'm done. Oh, that was fun. I have no more work. No, we can't fool ourselves with that either. There's always going to be more. So it's like we can get to a layer that we get to, and then the onion peels back again, and life's like, here you go. Here's some more to work on. You did really well with that stuff, so keep going. So it's like everything, if you run into another hiccup, if you feel jealous again, do not use that against yourself. That is a derivative feeling that will not help you. It's just recognizing, here I am again. Okay, I thought I dealt with some stuff. I dealt with it as best I could then. It's showing up again. Let me see if I can deal with it again. Or keep getting to that root. It's like there's always another, it's like, oh, we think we get it, but then that root's still there. And we got to like dig down even more and then get at that root. And that's where jealousy is a gift. I will swear until the day I die that this is all a gift, because it is, I think, the biggest way to face our insecurities. It is also hard, maybe one of the hardest ways to have to face these things. But I think it's a very empowered path. So if you're choosing this path on purpose and you go into it like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to blame my partners. I will communicate my feelings with my partners, but I won't blame them for this, for my experiences, for my triggers, for my emotions. Those are mine. I get to keep them. And sometimes it's like, I'm sad. I get to be sad. I can tell people I'm sad. Or I'm angry. I'm really fucking angry, but that's my feeling and not yours. And I own it. And I'm going to do what I want with my anger, because that's mine. And also, it's very helpful. The more that we own our own emotions, the easier it is to be with someone when they're in another emotional state. So the more I own my anger, the more I don't make that wrong, the more I can just sit with someone who's angry and be like, yeah, that fucking sucks. I feel you. Totally feel you. You're angry. I don't need to take that on. You know, that's what I used to do in my relationship with Marty. He would get angry. I take it on. Marty's angry. It's my anger now. I have to deal with it. I have to fix him. I have to meet his need. And now I'm just like, oh yeah, he's angry. Yeah, I feel you. I'm going to go for a run on the beach. I'll see you later. I love you. For real. It's such a different experience. And I used to get stuck in that doom loop and blame him and be resentful for being angry because I didn't know how to have a boundary around it because I had no understanding or ownership of my own emotions. So it's like all the work that we do inside for us, the more room we make for the people around us, the more room we make for not only our partners, but we make for our coworkers, that we make for our family, especially I slowed stuff I'm working on there. But the more room we have to sit with people in their emotions and to not make it wrong. Because when we make something wrong, then we create resistance. And guess what resistance does? Resistance just keeps more resistance. And yeah, I won't even get into a political rant, but that's why it's just a pendulum. You know, all it is it keeps a certain structure in place. But if we can learn the allowance feelings, and I don't mean a passive allowance, I mean a very active allowance, the more we can process and work through the emotions that come up in our emotional body. And I'll give you one, maybe two more examples on that, and then we'll get to conversation. But our emotional body, I like the analogy that it's like our physical body. So our physical body consumes things like food, right? Then we need to shit out that food. We cannot go around not letting go of that food. But with our emotions, right? We're like, oh, I feel sad. Hold on to it. I'm just going to hold on to it. I feel angry. I'm not going to let it out. I'm going to hold on to it. And we become emotionally constipated because we haven't learned how to digest our emotions, to process them, to get the fuel and the learning that's out of them, and then to let them go. Like to let them go and be like, thank you. Oh, that sadness. Woo. That was a doozy. That was a doozy, but I got through it and I learned something from it. You know, and that's where the more we can process our emotions, the quicker we get at it, the more we can say thank you and not be in resistance to the emotions, but learn something there. And each one of you is going to develop your own techniques for this. Like I'm just sharing what I've learned. I'm trying to give some images that you can hold on to. But what I'd love is that everybody has their own images. Everybody will come up. You'll come up with your own ways to process this, your own ways, your own mental framework of understanding this, your own words that feel true and resonate with you. And that's why it's a beautiful path, because you're going to go down and experience and learn your own. And then you'll relate it in, hopefully, my hope is that each one of us that liberates ourselves and goes through this empowerment process, especially through the path of jealousy, is that you then can share more with other people about how you've transformed and how you've learned through the process, and then give little glimmers of hope so that other people can start to realize that feeling jealous or afraid or insecure isn't a bad thing, that we can empower ourselves to move through that. And the more people that do that in this world, this is my big humanitarian, the less wars we'll have, the more working together in new agreements and new structures of agreements, because that's all we're doing right now is we're off-roading our relationships, right? We are off-roading our relationships to say that one structure that everybody says was right, I want to try something different. But when we off-road, we have to create our own agreements. Our own agreements means we need to understand our own needs. We need to be emotionally present and aware. We need to communicate. We need to see that other people might have different needs. All of these are on a micro level, right? Our one-on-one relationships. It is the same fucking shit that we're learning as humanity. It's like, oh, our life isn't working how it did before. Maybe we need new agreements. Maybe, like, what do you need over here? What do we need? How do we make that work? So I'm just really, really, really passionate about teaching individuals and giving the tools to individuals so that each one of us can be empowered so that we then ripple this shit out, because there's going to be no Tony Robbins of polyamory. You know, can you imagine that? Like if everybody needed to attend a big conference to learn, it would take us ages, generations. Like, I don't want to wait that long. I really want each one of you to go out there and be like, oh, got something. All right. Now I'm going to share that with the next person. And we're going to keep this chain reaction going so that we can all become more empowered in our lives. And scene.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Amory. Giving us your time and attention means so much to us, so we thank you. If you did enjoy this episode, please consider sharing it. You can share it with people you know or give us a shout out on social media. We love that. Remember, we've got access to a full online course, Transforming Jealousy at Pay What You Want. And we always love people joining our Amory community as a patron. So if you've received value from this podcast or our podcast over the last 2 years, please consider joining us Your small donations to Amory go a long way in making us capable of continuing to produce these episodes and sharing our learnings, which we love to do, as you know. So thank you for joining us. We love you, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.